提起西瓜，你会想到什么呢？
胡同，
快乐，
你的朋友呀，
夕阳，
夏天，
小时候，
火锅，
军训，
果子，
也可爱。
西瓜知道答案是 Viva La Vida 旗下一档人物对谈栏目，我们将与正在各个领域探索不同可能性的年轻人们一起聊一聊他们对自我和生命的思考，为听众呈现别具一格的生命状态。
So my mid-30s crisis is like, you know, finding clarity and then like constantly like, you know, contradicting with like the reality, the how everyone like sees at it and like, you know, how I see at it. So it's more on like a very type of a Zhuan Tai Ba. Like in Chinese, we call it like Wu Wei. So which is like, you're just like sailing.You just let the waves take you wherever it's going, but you're also working really hard, sharpening your tools and being very sharp and being very present and then moving forward. So answering your question in two lines, my crisis was like...
I basically tried to rebuild myself from scratch, like deny everything that I had or deny everything that's supposed to be me and to, you know, start searching. I didn't know what I was looking for, but I knew that I was looking for something. So yeah, right before turning 30, I mean, life came as waves, you know, like waves after waves, I would say, like it hits you from all different angles and sometimes it gets stronger and stronger. Birth, I would say. And it's something that I cannot change. I can't change the past. So it's still there, and I guess it will be there for a very long time. But what I can do right now is step by step, you know, gradually to accept it and to face it and deal with it eventually.
When love leaves your life, the empty pockets are filled by demons, and those demons are called depression.So the key thing is that, like, you know, less suffering you want to be, like, the depression starts from, like, you know, you unidentifying yourself as who you are, right? So because that's the basic symptom of depression, that you don't like the person who you are becoming or who you don't like the person who you are, right? The reason for that is because you have so much expectation, right? And you have your reality and expectation has a huge gap. So in this particular scenario, what I would like, you know, say is that,Go into life without expectations and let the life surprise you, and no matter what it surprises you with, take it with humility and kindness and let it be, right?
Do you believe that there's a purpose of life, a unique meaning, and if there is for you, what it is? Great, so so let's start. So welcome everyone, welcome to guest speakers and all the audience. So I'm Shaoning, friend of Viva La Vida and also the host of this podcast. So today we're going to talk about the 30-something crisis and how do we navigate depression at this stage. So first of all, I want to have a quick introduction, self-introduction with two of our speakers.Maybe Lele first, we start from Lalas. Just tell us who you are, where you are right now, what do you do, etc.
Okay, thank you, Xiaoning, and really nice to have this podcast with you and Beeman. I'm Lalas, I'm right now in Shanghai, and I work for a youth empowerment nonprofit. We teach social entrepreneurship, so that's how I've been engaging with a lot of youth, and many of them areyou know, really into this well-being. Well, I don't want to call it industry, but it's sort of like this phenomenon. And I personally experienced this as well, witnessing it as well, you know, through many of my friends' personal experience. So yeah, I'm really excited to discuss with you here tonight to share a little bit of, you know, my personal journey and what I've seen during this journey. Thank you.
Great. Thanks, Lars. Then Beeman.
Hi everyone, so my name is Biman. I'm from Sri Lanka in China for the past 16 years. And I come from like a very meditative, like very scenic background, like a little island. So there you actually get to meditate like wherever you actually go. Then after coming to China, I became a scientist. So I'm actually a scientist focusing on detecting depression from voice. So basically I spent like the past 5 years like building clinical diagnostic tools for detecting depression and also published papers in Frontiers in Psychiatry and also created commercial products around the whole well-being industry as like, you know, it is. So in mainly in healthcare sector. So my goal is to build low-cost diagnostic tools so that we can actually give the accessibility to a lot of people, so that like we can make sure that we can detect like, you know, mental health situations at a early stage. So that way we can intervene at like, you know, early and also help them to live a better normal life.
Great. Thanks, our geek and entrepreneur and scientist, Fima. So I also do a quick introduction of myself. So I'm Shani. I'm the founder of Viva La Vida. And Viva La Vida is a global platform that uses art to help people to reflect on themselves and create authentic connection with each other. So that's why mental well-being is also a central topic that we pay a lot of attention to. So before we start to discuss about depression, actually, for this series of podcasts, we have a bigger theme, which is what we call the 30-something crisis. So just a little bit of background before we start. So everybody knows quarter life crisis, right? So you know, when we just graduate from college, we have no idea what life will be like, and we start to have this existential crisis of what do we want to do, what path do we want to go. So this is pretty usual. I remember I had that when I was like 22, 23. I read a lot of books. And then the next stage there is like midlife crisis, where you have already achieved something, but maybe not totally according to what you planned when you were like a teenager. And then you are basically the central part of your family. You have your elder parents, you have your younger child, and you have to work all the time. You have a lot of responsibility and pressure. But I think these days, a new concept emerges, which is this 30-something crisis. And this is actually something that people around me, like this year, I'm 30, I think Lala is 29, and Bibu is 1 year older than me, maybe. And people around me talk about this a lot. So that's why we set the theme of this season as 30-something crisis, that we want to interview guest speakers who are either around this age or maybe even older than this age, but they can look back at what they thought, what happened to them around this stage of life, as well as younger people who are at their 20s or even 18, what they would imagine what would happen on their 30s all over the world. That's why this whole series of podcasts is going to be in English. So now I want to turn to our two guest speakers, maybe Biman first. So how do you feel about this 30-something? I guess beginning of 30-something, do you feel like you have a crisis? You have already passed it? What do you feel?
I say like, you know, by 30, I think I passed like, you know, what's supposed to be the crisis in a way, because I think everything happens for different people in different timelines, right? So it's also really important for everyone to understand that 30 crisis might happen for you at 25 or 35. It's not exactly on 30, right? So for me, it happened. So imagine like, you know, I'm a Sri Lankan kid, dropped in China when I was like 17. And then, like, I didn't speak Chinese. So then my whole... And I was a very career-driven person. And which means is, like, I push myself as much as I can to just be better at what I'm doing. And then that did not end up really well. So by 25, I think, 25, 26, I was in Forbes 30 under 30. And then I had a really big team. We built, like, interesting products. I had a really good girlfriend. And then by that time, my parents were healthy. I was healthy, but I was really depressed. So, like, I can remember that, like, you know, my mom is showing me pictures of paper cutouts or, like, you know, different, like, you know, articles that are getting published. They're telling me how proud they are. But I couldn't feel any of that. So I think that is where, like, you know, I realized that depression or this anxiety can happen. Not only when you're at your lowest, when you don't know what, when things are going around, it can also happen like, you know, when you are at some sort of like, you know, heightened place. So, and it's a continuous journey to work on that. It's like, you know, like I said, right? I mean, I know how to meditate because I was taught how to meditate from a kindergarten age, but it didn't help. So in the end of the day, like, you know, all the things that like, you know, we talk to everyone experience it in a different way. So I experienced it at an early stage of my life, which gave me the courage to be able to understand it in a bit better. And also like, you know, to do something about it in my later part of my life. And I would say like, you know, from 30 onward, it's more around finding clarity. would be like, you know, a good way of like, you know, putting words would be like, you know, my crisis now. So my mid-30s crisis is like, you know, finding clarity and then like constantly like, you know, contradicting with like the reality, the how everyone like sees at it and like, you know, how I see at it. So it's more around like a very wu wei type of a zhuan tai ba. Like in Chinese, we call it like wu wei. So which is like you're just like sailing, you just let the waves take you wherever it's going, but you're also working really hard, sharpening your tools and being very sharp and being very present and then moving forward. So answering your question in two lines, my crisis was like a little earlier, but the reciprocation of the crisis or else like, you know, the after effects of the crisis are like waves or like what we call as like, you know, these ripple effects, right? So, yeah, like, you know, time to time, you still get a panic attack or two here and there when things are not like, you know, going the way that you want it to go. So, yeah, so just chill and move forward, I guess.
Stay with the flow. Wow. I mean, we might even talk like a scientist. You have an introduction part, you have a main part, then you have a conclusion part. Yeah, we'll come back to you in a bit about this question of finding clarity, or we say finding purpose, finding meaning. I think that's what a lot of people are experiencing at this stage as well. So now let's turn to Lala's. So what do you think about 30-something, crisis or non-crisis?
Yeah, for me, I totally agree with Veeman. I'm turning 30 this August. So I do think my crisis came a little bit early as well. Like for many people, I have like a sort of like, people would say like I have a pretty challenging life starting, you know, pretty early on. I grew up in a single parent family, so I never lived with my dad. And that's like a huge missing part. I think I'm still like trying to heal myself from that. And actually, I think throughout my whole life, for the majority of it, I didn't really know what it was. You know, I didn't know that there's something lacking or I'm missing something, because my mom was constantly telling me that you don't miss anything, like you're not lacking. I mean, like maybe she's trying to convince herself that is the case, but you know, with time goes by, I realize that's not true. That's not the truth of myself. At least now I deeply feel that part. And I still don't know how to heal that. I'm still like struggling with that for sure. But when I was 15, actually, my mom got remarried. So at that moment, I think my whole world was like crumbling down. And there's just like no grounding part for me to hold on to. So if I, you know, have to really go back into history and talk about when did my crisis actually started, I guess that's exactly, you know, the starting point when I was 15, because I got this feeling that I was abandoned and I don't have a family where I belong anymore. And that kind of depression lingered on for, I mean, pretty much throughout my whole teenagehood. And I was really depressed, really bad. But it was never like, you know, it was never like shone on the surface level. Like I was totally normal with my friends at school, with my work and everything. Like Bima and Shani, I think we're all like pretty purpose-driven people. So, well, on the surface, I look really normal. But every day when I go back home, I was like really depressed and I couldn't sleep nights after nights. It was really bad insomnia. And then it turned into like something physical. I became like, you know, really distressed with all the bad migraines. I had to go to hospital all the time and everything. So at one point I totally broke down when I was 18, you know, the first semester when I go to university, I was like, this is too much for me. I had this, you know, existential crisis hitting me really hard. And I was like, I can't deal with it anymore. So I dropped out. I basically tried to rebuild myself from scratch, like deny everything that I had or deny everything that's supposed to be me and to, you know, start searching. I didn't know what I was looking for, but I knew that I was looking for something. So yeah, right before turning 30, I mean, life came as waves, you know, like waves after waves, I would say, like it hits you in all different, from all different angles. And sometimes it gets stronger and stronger. So in 2021, my mom passed away. She's been struggling with cancer for years. And finally, you know, in 21, she passed away. And within the next 6 months, I got a divorce.
I was deep into a toxic relationship, full of abuse and violence and everything. That's a whole other story. But yeah, in a nutshell, like, I mean, it's a, people would say it's a pretty hard life for someone who's not even 30 yet. But I would say, you know, like with all that happened, I think, yeah, same as Beeman, I'm now all looking for the clarity, not even something positive, you know, because I think I'm gone with that, you know, a duality of seeing them as good or bad. Because for me, these are all just like different experiences. When you are at the moment when you were, you know, experiencing it first time, maybe there's like this kind of differentiation of like being good or bad. But when you look back, it's all just part of your personal story, your own experience. And I would not deny that. So now I would be fully, you know, embracing this history of myself, you know, either depressed or like happy or whatever emotion that was, I embrace them all and acknowledge them, like knowing this is what I am. This is who I am now because of all those history. Yeah. Thank you.
Thanks, Lalas, for your very brief and honest sharing about your own story. That actually reminds me of an ancient saying in Chinese. I don't know if Bima would understand that, but it's 天将降大任于斯人也。 必将苦其心志，劳其筋骨，饿其体肤。 So it basically talk about if God, if destiny want you to take more responsibility and have great achievement, then it will definitely impose a lot of pain on you physically, emotionally, etc. So I mean, I was reading a book that is by Viktor Frankl called Man's Search for Meaning. I don't know if 12 of us, 12 of you guys have read that book before, one of my favorite book. So Viktor Frankl was a Jew. He was also a psychologist during the Second World War time, and that's why he was also in the concentration camp. So when he was in the concentration camp, he was trying to observe why there are some people who look very strong physically, but decided to just even suicide at the very beginning. And then there are other people who look very weak physically, but they can basically sustain and persist until the end of the liberation. And after observing, you know, thousands of people, he figured that it is purpose, it is meaning that those people who have it, who, you know, can persist and basically, you know, stay alive until the end. So he had this conclusion that it's okay for human to endure pain, but we have to know. So then I want to throw back this question to 12 of you, that after you have this, you know, depression, whether it's coming from finding clarity, finding purpose, or it comes from having this awareness of missing something only until very late of life, or having this confusion, how did you deal with it? So maybe we start from Bhima.
So I would say, like, you know, I actually have to answer the two questions that you mentioned before, right? So there is an English saying for what you mentioned from the Chinese saying also. It's called God gives the toughest challenges for the bravest soldiers. So it's something that I always believe also, so that there's a reason that, like, you know, you're going through hardships. It's kind of like, you know, you sharpen your knife till it becomes useful to yourself or someone else, right? On the other hand, like, you know, like, I've actually stopped believing in a lot of bumper stickers that, like, you know, Steve Jobs has said, including, like, you know, don't look stuff like looking backwards, like, you know, because the whole life right now, I believe, like, you know, present moment is the most important thing. So if you are at a very clarity, if you're at, like, you know, your best self, if you're at, like, you know, let's say a very calm down, enlightened position, you would actually start making everything sense right away at that point. So you don't need to, because when you look down back into the past, it's just going to give you baggage and it's going to create, like, you know, anxiety. So when you look forward, even it's the same thing. So you're projecting yourself forward and forward and thinking with the what if can happen, right? So the only thing that's making sense is not how you're going to connect the dots backward. It's like, you know, the present moments. So look at all the dots in front of you and then just, like, calmly look at them, and then the dots that make sense would emerge by themselves. So I think the key thing here is that, like, you know, more and more we try to be in the present in a very grounded state, that to understand a very simple thing, There are things that we can control and there are things that we cannot control. So there are only two things, right? Only thing you can do is like, you know, do not like, so I would give like a very simple example, like when you, for the answer, for the question that you asked me right now. So you asked me, how did I deal with depression, right? So I learned how to surf. So basically like you go into the beach, right? You get a board and you go into the wave. And then you just, only thing you need to do is stand up. That's the only thing about surfing. You go into the waves and then again, you just have little courage to stand up on the boat. And then waves would do the rest. So the same way, if you really look at it, the best surfers are not the ones that like, you know, who are chasing waves. The best surfers are not the ones that like, who are paddling the hardest. The best surfers are the ones that like, you know, when they're in the middle of the ocean, they know which waves matches them well. They know like, you know, what is my like, you know, skill level, right? Like, what is the wave? Is it for me? Is it like, you know, actually matching me or not matching me? So it's an intuition. It's like a sense. So that way, like, you know, when you go into the ocean, like when you kind of feel that intuition, like this wave I can ride, you just stand up because like, you know, that is the only skill that you've been practicing your whole life, which is just to stand up on a boat. And then like giving it back into like, you know, how I dealt with like, you know, my depression is going back and understanding that I have a problem. So most of the time, like, you know, for female colleagues, my girlfriends, all of them, it's very easy. You guys have a lot of options when you are depressed. You can talk to your friends, you can read books, you can just like complain about it in public. But guys, no, we have like this crazy ego, this like, you know, man thing that we are not soft. Won't push a run around the nejong, right? Like, you know, we are like, you know, very like strong people. So we have two options. Either kill yourself or just drink enough so that you just like, you know, forget about the previous day, right? So when you understand, like, obviously you from day one, you're not going to start like planning your suicide, right? So you're going to start with like, you know, very unhealthy habits, which is like, you're going to work really late and you're going to tell it like, you know, oh, my work is everything. Like, you know, I want to be successful. You just give yourself so much pressure. Second thing is that like, you know, you stay out late or like you stop calling your friends and family. You just tell them you're busy. And then the third thing is that like, you know, you just drink with everyone you can find and you come up with an excuse for that, right? You just like tell that, oh, this is business, so that's why I'm drinking. Or else like, you know, this is just like, you know, social, that's why I'm doing that. So moment you kind of understand that your core behavior is changing, like, you know, not for the good side, right? But for the negative side. So then it's really important to understand that like, you know, you have a problem. It's in the early stages. And then when it's keep on happening every day or every week and you can see a pattern emerging, you might be really blinded for it. So that way, that's where the closest friends or the colleagues come into the play and tell you that like, you know, we see something different with you. Why don't you just like, you know, meet a friend or meet a doctor or talk to someone, right? So for my case, like I was very fortunate to be surrounded by friends like that at the office. And then they just like recommend me to just like go see a therapist for like, you know, one session. And then it just made sense, like, you know, that my behavior was changing and then not for the good side. So then the advice that the therapist usually give you for the first time, you just feel like it's just bunch of like bullshit, literally. And because like, you know, you just like, just feel like you're just wasting your time. But that's the point that like, you know, basically when you go with a closed mindset versus an open mindset, when you go to meet someone to heal or like, you know, to argue, right? Because what I just did was like, you know, the breakthrough happened for me on the second day. So my therapist told me like, you know, leave your anger at the door when you come into the room. So it was a very simple exercise, right? So just said that whatever that you're really pissed about today, like, you know, write it down on a piece of paper and leave it at the door. And then you come to the office. And when you go out of the, after the session, you can take it. It's okay. Because he's like, you know, I really don't care about the rest of your day. But when you come into the session, make sure that like, you know, you come, you just leave all your baggage at the door and like, come talk to me. I think that encouraged me to keep on going to meet the person. And then having a very interesting conversation back and forth helped me to find out like, you know, why am I really paining? And then we just worked on like, you know, the point where the pain was and then slowly work on top of it to heal. So before you get healed, you need to be agreed to be healed. So that is like, you know, an internal and external state. So the most important thing is that there are so many, even the nature heals you. If you're really pissed off, you can take a walk. But if your mind is not ready to be healed, right? If your body is not ready to be healed, no matter you take 100 walks in the most beautiful park in the world, like, you know, you won't feel any difference. So that's, I think, like, you know, the first step for the question that you asked. And then obviously, like, the answer is like very multifold. So I'm not going to tell all the other stuff, but let me start the conversation from the first step, which is like, be ready to be healed before you actually start in your journey. Yeah. Yeah.
We will come back to this purpose, non-purpose dichotomy. I have a lot to say that. But I'm not saying that your metaphor is teaching us to be on the floor. But the reason why exactly I like your metaphor is you mentioned the part of you have to choose the wave that matches you. Right. I think that's, well, besides the fact that you have to teach yourself to stand on the board, but also making a decision of what are the paths that really is more true and authentic to your heart. I think that's the thing that we're facing, actually. So I want to pass to Lala. So tell us more, because I know you did a long journey to explore yourself from the, I don't know, like the temple in China all the way to Bali. Tell us what happened.
Yeah, I think we need to rewind a little bit, because I think, you know, I have two very obvious waves of you know, depression or whatever we call that. So the first time was when I was 15. I didn't know what it was. I was just adolescent, and I was dwelling in that feeling, you know, for a whole summer. You know, the first summer, I graduated my junior high, and my mom moved in with her new husband, and I was left alone living all by myself, and I was totally just feeling sorry for myself for the whole summer, doing nothing. So I think my first advice, if I can say that, is move your ass, you know, take action. Don't dwell in your feeling and feel sorry for yourself. It's not going to help. And especially for a very young person, you know, you have to reach out for help. Nothing is going to knock on your door and be asking if you are okay. Because like I said, I put on a facade the whole time. For my whole teenagehood, I was putting on a facade. Like, even people knock on my door and I would say, oh, I'm totally fine, thank you, right? I would reject them. I would not reach out and be like, you know, absorbing all those negativity by myself. And that led to really a deterioration of my health. I got severe migraine. I was dealing with very bad insomnia from a very early age. I would literally like not sleep for days, like for 3-4 days consecutively. And that's literally like killing myself thinking back. So moving on, when I'm almost, you know, doubling the age, when I was 28, 29, dealing with these kind of depression again after a huge life crisis, right? That's when my mom just passed away, and I was in a really, you know, abusive relationship, toxic relationship, and I didn't have the courage to get out of all that. And that experience when I was 15, you know, came all the way back. I see a lot of flashbacks and everything, and at the same time dealing with a lot of, you know, panic attacks and all that, being reinforced throughout the years, I guess. But this time I feel really lucky, same as Beeman, like I'm surrounded with mature people, like a group of supporting friends who understand you, who empathize with you, and they can really, you know, notice your vulnerability. For example, to be honest, Xiaoni is one of the very first people asked me like if you are okay, like if you need help, and I recommend you so and so books. You should probably do this test and that. You know, all the tools they gave us, and all the support and love and care, that really gave me, you know, the courage to reach out for help and to really express myself and to really, you know, start healing. Just like Beeman said, like, It's not like luck, right? This is something you have to proactively do it. And after that, I started this whole journey of self-healing. I started with books from all kind of, you know, authors of all different kind of angles, right? Some are really spiritual, some are really scientific. But I was just like, you know, I guess on the very first stage was just trying to distracting myself, you know, from that negativity, that kind of depressed stage. And then gradually I was sort of like in the healing mode, I would say. I was doing meditation, yoga, and everything, and really find a supportive system that works for myself. I don't think, I don't think there's like a universal heal for everyone. I totally don't believe that. If anyone's telling you that, I don't think, I would be very suspicious. but for me personally, I think, well, try as many as you can early on and then choose a path for yourself that actually works. Because I did therapy, I did, you know, a lot of different things. And eventually I found the right path for myself, and I guess whatever works for me works for me, and I just, you know, stick to it, and I think I'm good now. I won't say my journey is done. I won't say like I would say I'm still healing myself, right? Because some of these root causes really embedded with my whole birth, I would say, and it's something that I cannot change. I can't change the past, so it's still there. I guess it will be there for a very long time, but what I can do right now is step by step, you know, gradually to accept it and to face it and deal with it eventually. I'm not trying to erase it, to be honest with you. I think what I'm doing is really acknowledging it, because I think for a very long time I was trying to disguise it and be like, oh, I'm strong, it's nothing, like I can just leave it in the past or move on and stuff like that. But then you realize it becomes a pattern in your life, especially in your relationships. It keeps coming back, you know, your childhood trauma and all those kind of things. And that's the moment when I realize, oh, I have to stop hurting myself, because I'm constantly granting other people the power to hurt myself. And I realize the root cause of that is because deep down I don't have the courage and I don't love myself. That is the root cause. Otherwise, I won't grant anyone the power to hurt me. It's not possible if you truly love yourself, right? You're going to stop it right away. So yeah, I would say if there are anything that I can share is those two pieces, to acknowledge your weaknesses and to face it directly and then take action, move your ass.
Thanks a lot, Lalas, for your sharing. Actually, I found out there's three recurring themes that all of us mentioning about. The first is about awareness, knowing that you're sick. I mean, this is not like a physical sickness that you can very obviously say, right? Most of the time, people will just take melancholy or even, you know, weakness in your, you know, not being so strong. But indeed, actually, how I find out, you know, or how I actually starting to heal myself is exactly also because I find out my mind does not work in the same way as I did before during the depression. Like when you're depressed, I think, first of all, I think very slowly. I have a very bad memory. I couldn't even make decision, and just everything becomes so different. I was reading a book called Overcoming Depression these days. So it talks about there's three neural systems in your mind that dominates how you think. So the first system is basically the system to help you get a motivation. So basically you have a goal and then you are result oriented. You try to get something that you want. And this is most of the time, especially when we work, when we, you know, do a lot of like work career stuff, that system activates. And then there's a second system, which basically gives you this very serene joy and happiness that you don't even need to do a lot of things. You take a walk in the forest, you know, smell the flower, it gives you this serene joy. And this is also the system that helps you to feel love from friends and family. And then there's this third system, which is called this threat. I don't remember the exact name, but it's about threat and anxiety and everything. And that system activates itself basically when we are actually meeting with some threats. Think about it. If we were in the ancient time, there is like a huge bear or lion in front of us, then we probably want to run away or, you know, basically doing things that consume as less energy as possible. So it basically saying that putting your brain in one of these two, three different systems, really it have this feedback loop effect that, you know, when you put yourself in the serene system, you feel happier and happier and, you know, you just enjoy the serenity. And putting yourself into the threat system, basically you will think even worse about what the situation is in order to, you know, basically experience this very ancient mechanism for us to get depressed. I actually had my read one of my undergrad certificate on evolutionary biology. So depression is there, and there is a reason for that. And I think after reading that book, I constantly remind myself, if I start to think about reality in a very negative way, probably I am putting myself in this neural system that is gonna make things even worse. So I think that moment that I actually realized this, that I have this awareness, then I start to think in another way. I think that awareness helps a lot. As well as, I don't know if you guys experienced this, but I also only recently know that I think I also have ADHD. I didn't get the official diagnosis, of course, but I also read books, and it's very obvious that the symptoms match a lot. And I think ADHD and depression are highly linked with each other. And I think knowing that also helps a lot in terms basically understanding my own behavior and not thinking, you know, there's something wrong with me, but I'm just different in some way. So that's the first thing that we're talking about, awareness. And the second thing that is very interesting that Bhima mentioning about staying now. So, you know, now is the only moment that that matters. I actually read the book, The Power of Now, and learned a lot from that. But at the same time, Lala's also just mentioned about this concept of distracting yourself, right? Doing something, basically not thinking about whatever that depresses you. And I find this a very interesting dichotomy, because think about it, staying now and distracting, this sounds like two different things, but they are actually the same thing. Because I think what we are doing when we are depressed is we're not focusing now, but focusing on all the other moments, like in the future, what bad things are going to happen, in the past, what terrible things happened. But the ability of, I guess, calming down your mind and staying true to what you feel at this moment, or even react to it a little bit, I think it's totally fine. That reminds me of a call that I had with my friend. So at that time, I was still in a relationship, but then, you know, my boyfriend is not so good at replying to message at that time, right? And then I was complaining to my friend. I was saying, you know, but I really want to send him a message. But then when I think about this, I also think about, what if he doesn't reply? And then just thinking about the thought that he might not reply makes me so, you know, angry and sad as well. And then I remember my friend told me, like, if you miss him, then send a message to him now. And then I was like, but what if he doesn't reply? I mean, I'm gonna get anxious, blah, blah, blah. And she's, okay, but if he doesn't reply, then feel anxious at that moment. Not feel it now. Otherwise, you're gonna feel all those negative emotions at this right moment. Just do whatever you feel right now. And when that emotion come, or when that bad, you know, result come, you deal with it in the next moment. So I think that also helps me a lot in terms of understanding, you know, how to stay true to how I feel and how to react, you know, when things comes. And then the third thing that both of you mentioned is about the help from other people. I think that also, I think this is a double, you know, double-sided sword, because on the one hand, we get a lot of love from our friends, and that actually helps me a lot. Like when I start to get depressed, I actually have a friend who are experiencing the same thing. So basically, we get up together, we go to gym, and this helps a lot. But on the other hand, I think people like us, the very reason that it's easier for us to get depressed than other people, it's also because we are extra sensitive. I think there is like a logical line now that I think about it, you know, like, for example, let's imagine if today I'm late for work, and then I will start to assume and imagine that, oh, my boss is going to be angry at me, and he's going to think I'm an irresponsible person, blah, 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 even before he actually says something. Right? Because this is all assumption, but we make a lot of assumptions on how other people see us just because we're sensitive people. And then, okay, so even if your boss actually think that you are an irresponsible person, that's not going to hurt you unless you also think that you are an irresponsible person. But I think a lot of times we actually also take what other people think of us and immerse into what we actually think about ourselves. And I think now knowing that logic actually helps me a lot as well, that not making too much assumptions on what other people think. And even if they think like that, as long as I don't think myself like that, I know what's the reason behind, then it's all fine. So that's something that I'm using throughout the way to helping myself as well. Yeah, just would love to know what you guys, are there any other techniques or what you guys think about that?
I think the last part that you mentioned was like, you know, super interesting, which is like basically most of the meaning for the words are given by us, right? So we give meaning to words. So when we give meaning to words, right? So the hardest thing that happens is like, you know, we give ourselves a chance to open like this empty space. And then we actually like, you know, give it a possibility to be negative, right? So basically that is the thing, right? Like usually most of the times, like I actually like want to share something really important here, because everyone define depression in their own mother language, right? So like, you know, you are Chinese, you both are Chinese, so that you guys say yuzheng. If you say yuzheng sheshema, like, you know, you'll have like a way of saying what depression is, right? So none of us who are speaking in English at this conference, our mother tongue is not English, right? So the way that I define depression in Sinhala is, I'll say it in Sinhala and I'll do the translation for you. So it goes like, jeevite adare hisunama histang walta yakuringa, which means like, when love leaves your life, the empty pockets are filled by demons, and those demons are called depression. So if you say that, like, you know, in your life, that you have love and joy and they like, you know, leave, right? So then you have these empty pockets, right? So, and then you can't have empty pockets in life. So they need to get filled by something. So the demons come and fill them, right? And those demons, you can give different names. So one name is depression, clinical name. One name is anxiety. Some can be like, you know, panic attack, something. Because all these things are defined by the symptoms, not really the disease itself, right? So because I work in neuroscience myself for a very long time to understand that we don't know anything about our brain, like literally. So that is the reality. So like, you know, when we get like, you know, diabetes, we know that what to do, right? We know that when you have high blood pressure, we know what happens. When we have cancer, we have machines to look at what's going on. But when we are going through depression, we have a sense of what the person is going through by just sub-measuring their symptoms. Not really like, you know, understanding that this part of the brain, this area here, 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 they all show correlation, but it doesn't show like, you know, nothing other than that. So the reason for this is why is important is that we have a lot of concepts that we have told ourselves from when we were young till now, which is that what happiness is, what sadness is, what success is, what like, you know, failure is. So all these are stories, right? So that when you really look at like, you know, kids that who don't have concepts, they just like, you know, cry when they're hungry. And then just like, you know, they just like laugh when they're happy and they just have a really good time without concepts. And then we have school teaching like, you know, a layer of concepts, education, society, everything teaches on layering concepts and making us very complex, right? Like so that simplest thing in life becomes like, you know, extremely complicated. So what I've been trying to tell people is that same way that you're going to a gym and making your 8-pack or 6-pack, you can actually like, you know, build your 8-pack in your brain, which is like gain, loss, good reputation, bad reputation, praise, censure, play, pain and pleasure. All these 8 things, right? Whether you get the positive one or the negative one, you just make sure that it doesn't affect you. So same way as the meditative state, right? Where that when good happens to you, right? When bad happens to you, you take it as it is because it's just one thing that happened. So more and more we get attached to these emotions, like, you know, where that like we celebrate really high when we like have an achievement and we cry really bad when we have like something like, you know, loss. Does make us human, but it creates suffering because we have expectation out of every single little thing that's happening in our life and we try to give meaning for that. So when you try to get away from this meaning and then just like go away with your life and saying that like, you know, you worked hard, you studied for an exam, of course you're going to pass the exam, right? So then like celebrating that just because you passed it, or else like, you know, if you didn't work hard and like you failed the exam, these are like inevitable results, right? So overjoying, like, you know, celebrating or like, you know, crying on top of it, trying to be too human is sometimes also not the right answer. Because it just creates unwanted expectation and suffering. So the key thing is that like, you know, less suffering you want to be, the depression starts from like, you know, you unidentifying yourself as who you are, right? So because that's the basic symptom of depression, that you don't like the person who you are becoming or who you don't like the person who you are, right? The reason for that is because you have so much expectation, right? And you have your reality and expectation has a huge gap. So in this particular scenario, what I would like, you know, say is that go into life without expectations and let the life surprise you. And no matter what it surprises you with, take it with humility and kindness and let it be, right? So there's like, you know, if you feel like celebrating, of course, go celebrate. No one is stopping you from doing that. But it the question is that, like, it won't make any difference. Because, like, when we really look at the why these things are important, it's because there's a digital record of all the celebrations, even our iPhones, right? Like, even everything. We take photos, we try to create a memory and record it. By doing so, our brain, which actually was the device to keep good memories as it is and remove the bad memories as it is, has become really weak. So since we have all the good moments in our iPhones, Facebook feed, and WeChat Pengyuan, right? So we have no reason to take that joy and then implant it our memory very deep enough till it feels. So the thing that we need to rearrange in our brain or in our psychology is that when you win an exam, when you feel good, feel really good within. And you don't need any person telling you, like, you know, ni jenda puyao ikka laladuya. Like, we have the biggest problem that we need is, like, we all need laladue. We all need, like, someone to come cheer us, like, you know, jayo ni hambanga, like, you know, even right now, right? Even then, when we are talking in this podcast right now, I'm looking at the like button and see, like, how many times people are clicking this, right? So, like, literally, like, our whole brain mechanisms are, like, you know, driven by, like, just these small dopamine bumps, right? But the external dopamine bumps have become really stronger, that our internal implantation of those thoughts and memories deep down into our cortex has become weaker and weaker. So that's why, like, you know, we don't have good dreams anymore. Like, you know, we are just like very, when we go sleep, we are just mellow, dead, tired. There's no fantasy, there's nothing. Because your brain is like, you know, no, just like go to Facebook and, like, you know, just you'll figure out your dream there. So my point is, like, very simply to put, is that don't let external things to create strong implants in your brain. Make sure that, like, you know, the internal things, internal, like, you know, feelings, emotions, you are really good at handling them and leave what is necessary with you and then kick out what is, like, not, what it is toxic for you. So then I think this would be much better.
I really like the metaphor of the six pack. You're the king of metaphor, I find it today. that I think it's, you know, we both mentioned about this neural ump system, understanding how the brain works and being aware and knowing that we're now not being in a normal or, you know, very positive stage. I think this mere awareness is already very important stage on the healing. And then after that, let us remember the book Eat, Pray, Love that I recommend to you. I remember there it was also a scene talking about, remember the guy from Texas, Richard was telling Liz, saying that, you know, Liz, you have to pick up your thoughts in your brain like you pick up your clothes in your wardrobe, right?
Yes.
I think that's also very important thing. So let us,
I watched that movie at least 50 times.
Me too. I mean, I even read the book, I think, more than 5 times. Audiobook. The book is much better, actually.
Yeah.
Let us, what do you think?
I love that book, by the way, and I just went to Bali for the Spirit Festival, and it's amazing, you know, like, I think I'm doing my own Eat, Pray, Love. it's manifesting in my own way, but definitely I think the book itself is like a seed planted in my life. Really appreciate it. And I do think, you know, like, rewind a little bit, going back to Xiaoning's point, that maybe because we're too sensitive, right? That's why, like, we feel all these things and all the feelings and everything. I mean, it's important that we accept it. People are all different, you know, like, some people are just ultra sensitive, like, some people are just, like, pretty, how to say, not that soft, I would say. But it's all okay, like, we're just different. But I mean, like, for me personally, you know, I think it's for a very long time, it's just like hard to accept the way that I am. Just like Beeman said, you have all these expectations and delusions about yourself. You know, like, you thought you're something, someone that you are actually not. And when you realize that, or when any kind of signal pops up that, you know, sort of like signaling you are not the one that you expect yourself to be, and it's extremely depressing. For example, like, well, when I was much, much younger, I thought I'm super loved, right? And, well, maybe I am still loved, But when my mom got remarried, I was like, wow, like she doesn't love me anymore. And all those are just like made up stories in my mind. But I thought I see those illusions, and I bought into those stories, and I kept telling myself, oh, nobody loves you anymore. And you became ruthless. You know, that's kind of like the self-told story that I later on, like, I was totally like writing my life story, surrounding, you know, the core of it, which is an illusion, I mean. So I would say, like, we have to find the truth about ourselves. Because looking back, I realized those are all illusions. The feeling of not being loved, the feeling of being abandoned and everything. Right now, if you ask me, I would say I feel loved all the time. Sometimes, like, you don't have to be loved by people, you know what I mean? Like, I feel super loved by the universe, to be honest. Like, so when I start appreciating all the little things, like every day the sunshine, the rain, and I don't know if you guys feel the same thing, because when I was younger, like when I was really depressed, I hate the rain. I used to really hate the rain, and every day, like when it's not shining, right, when the sun is not out there, I gave myself an excuse to be depressed. But now, like, when you really start appreciating everything, like every piece of leaf, every flower, everything, literally everything that's happening in your life, accepting them as the way they are, I think maybe this is the meaning of life. I don't know. I don't know what else it can be. You know, just accepting the truth of myself and accepting the truth of life as the way it unfolds in front of you. So yeah, I guess those are just like my honest feelings. I don't know if, because I was never diagnosed when I was a teenager, you know, I didn't know I was depressed. I was really deep in my own feeling, and I didn't reach out to anyone. And back then, I mean, like that was like 2008. Right? It's really early. Like, nobody talks about that in China. Even now, I mean, it's still kind of like stigmatized, right? But I do feel extremely honored that throughout the years, I personally, you know, supported many friends. They really trusted me and showed me their vulnerability, shared their stories during their hardest times. And I really, really appreciate their trust and appreciate, you know, all the time we spent together during those times, the companion and everything. And on the other hand, I also feel really lucky. This is the time changed. Now we can have this podcast, you know, having this amazing host, Xiaoning and Biben. We can openly discuss about this and share our own experience and hopefully, you know, like, yeah, shed some lights into other people's life. Yeah.
I really like the point you're making about acceptance. Actually, on my notes on my Mac and iPhone, I have a note that names 快乐宝典. I don't know how to translate that into English. Maybe like a treasure of happiness.
快乐宝典.
Yeah, Bima, you are the translator master.
Like folder of happiness or pouch of happiness?
Okay, can you type that word? Yeah, but anyway, that's not the point. So basically, I wrote down three words that I constantly remind myself when I was depressed. The first word is curiosity. So just look at the world as you are a newborn baby and everything is fresh to you. And take all the problems and challenges that you need to conquer and have fun as if you're in the game. I think that's the first word. And the second word is acceptance, as basically what Alala said. So I think the source of the pain we have is actually not acceptance. Think about it. If you have a company and it goes bankruptcy, if you accept it as how it is, then you're not going to feel, you know, any pain or whatever, but you think it shouldn't go bankruptcy, and what happens, blah, 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 and then you start to have this pain. Or take another example, you have a friend and she's always late, but if you accept her as who she is, then you are not gonna get angry. But exactly, you were thinking, but she shouldn't be late, you know why she's late? And then there is a pain there, right? So that's the point of acceptance. And then the third point, which is actually my next question to you guys, is meaning. So I find out also from the book, Man's Search for Meaning. Yeah, by the way, my team are reminding me I have to talk slowly. So slowly. So from the book, Man's Search for Meaning, it talks about we as human have this responsibility of defining our own meaning. meaning means what is the unique value of our being that existing in this world that is irreplaceable to other people. I find that very powerful for me, even for now. I think now thinking about what I'm doing through Viva La Vida, which, you know, uses art to bring people together, and just thinking about if I did not do this, then there's probably not 20,000 people from more than 60 countries to draw their life and reflect on who they are. Maybe there will be other people doing this, I don't know, maybe 10, 15 years later, but that's the impact I could create to this world, which is unique. And I think that now really give me a lot of strength. I mean, of course, there's ups and downs, you know, like sometimes I also sort of, because the problem with meaning is it only makes sense when you believe in it. But when you are in depression, you don't feel any motivation or any interest towards anything else. So also that's something that I'm still trying to figuring out. And now I want to throw this question to both of you, maybe starting from Bhima. You know, do you believe there is a meaning or purpose? If there is, what is yours and how did you find it? And maybe you can share a bit about your story behind as well.
So back to the Chinese translation is Guidebook of Happiness.
Okay.
Or Happiness Handbook.
Okay.
So I think, like, you know, it's very simple, right? Like, I don't even though I work in AI to just like detect depression, I always figure out, like, you know, life becomes really simple when you consider yourself as the most stupidest person in the room, I would say. So I try to, like, you know, teach myself things in a really easy way, right? So I feel like if you find yourself in a hole, in this hole, at this situation is depression, what is the first thing that you should be doing? Stop digging, right? Even though you have a shovel, you should, when you are in a hole already, you should stop digging, which means, like, you know, do not do the same things, right, that you used to do to solve the problem. So here it's important that, like, you know, where the inspiration comes from, or, like, you know, why you do what you do to just, like, you know, change your state of mind, right? So my one came from partly a noble goal, partly fear, partly, like, you know, trying to understand that what's the point of what I'm doing right now in my life, which is like, at that time, I think I have like close to 300 people working for me. So it's not a small amount of people. And then you ask yourself, it's just like, what's life? Life is very simple, that you need to just, like, you know, find, be curious enough every day you wake up so that you can find an answer for, like, you know, a problem that you're scratching your head, right? So I want to, like, you know, find joy. So this is how my life starts, right? So, like, you know, if you want, you're already in the hole, I need a rope, right? So my rope is, like, you know, positivity, joy, like, you know, whatever the thing that you just, like, say, I need a ladder to come out of the hole first. Because no matter what I'm trying to do inside the hole, it's not going to be any meaningful at all. Because, like, you know, first I need to change my mindset, which is, like, you know, going from a negative role to, like, a ping pong, like, you know, flat ground, right? So, like, because you can't change the world from being in a hole. Let's be clear, because when you are in the hole, you can only see what the hole shows you. When you look up, you won't see the entire sky. You see the version of the sky that is, like, given for you, right? So it's really important that you just first fix yourself to get out of the hole, so that you just get into the ground first, not even climbing a mountain, just, like, get into the normal ground, like, just be okay, right? So the quickest way is that, like, you know, I mean, people go on trips, like, you know, they talk to therapists, like, you know, they do different ways to, like, you know, try to get up the hole, right? So for me, a combination of things worked. And I also did travel quite a bit, like, those days, because thank God, like, you know, I had the chance to travel the world because of different conferences. And those were really good excuses to just, like, you know, escape from harsh reality that I was depressed. But when you are, like, you know, traveling around, you just try to meet, like, you know, people that who are extremely different than who you are, and then teaches you one lesson at a time in a very series or a parallel order, right? So that helped me to kind of, like, you know, first become normal in my setting, and then telling myself that this can happen again. So, like, literally that this is not, like, you know, something that just happened once and then it's going to be, like, forever. So you just have the risk of getting it again. And I really didn't want to get it again, right? Or else, like, you know, I wanted to be really prepared, like, you know, if I'm going through that journey again. So I want to figure out, like, you know, basically how to detect like that I'm getting into like, you know, depression as early as possible, right? So this actually ended up being a company. So in a very weird way. So building diagnostic tools, like, you know, I started studying, I started researching, and then I just realized that there's a huge gap in the market. Then I just like, you know, realized that like more I learn about this thing is going to help me to just like, you know, get to know the problem a little bit better. Since I'm attached to the problem, not the solution, then I always kind of have this feeling that I'll come up with like a solution that is useful for me. Because I started like looking at all the work that I've done previously. And then I just realized that none of the products that I've used will be like, you know, used by mom, dad, like my brother, or like, you know, my wife or anyone around me, right? So like, you know, we work with millions of clients and like, you know, this many subscribers. Like, you know, imagine even like, you know, this Tencent meeting, right? Like, you know, the guy who developed like, you know, this like button, his parents will never even use it, right? So in this way that when you really look at like, you know, the amount of energy that you're putting into building something, if your closest people are not even using it, right? So then why is the point of like, you know, building that in the first place? So that was kind of like my thought process. I wanted to build tools that me, my family, my close friends would use. So that was a fundamental mind shift from building products for monetary value versus building product for purpose. So the whole, and also you need to make sure that like, you know, the, you can't be a social entrepreneur and say that like, you know, listen, I'm running my AI company on grant money, right? You need to have the business, you need economics need to make work. So you're running a business in AI. So then you need to be realistic also. So then like finding a realistic business model around deep learning technology and mental health sounded like a really interesting journey because it was like super early stage, like, and then like 5 years ago. And I found it like, you know, extremely rewarding. So that like, you know, I just realized that if I endure the pain and move forward by doing that, in the end of the day, I'll create a branch of science that is not being explored by many people. And I'd be proud of the fact that I'm one of the few people who are exploring this section of understanding human brain through voice. So it's a very egoistic thing, I would say. I'm not gonna lie, but I'm very aware of my feelings and emotions. And the thing is that, like, you know, the good thing and the bad thing is that by doing it, I don't want to build a tool to solve depression while being depressed building it. It's just like a very important to understand, right? Because the reason for it is that, like, you know, the economy is really bad right now, right? Like, you know, the investments are like, you know, not as like ample as it was before, right? The users are very cautious. So like, you know, mental health is not taken seriously, even though we are talking about this on a stage right now. No one really cares about mental health as much as they should be, right? So because of XYZ, these all these reasons, right? So there is a huge amount of stress that what is the best interface? Like, how should we price these things? Like, how can we give the access? Make sure that the product that we are building is also a business, not just like, you know, a pure fun project to do. So simply my purpose came from finding a solution for my own problem, but I'm very realistic about it so that I'm not going to end up being depressed by building a product to solve depression. So that's actually like, you know, my thesis.
This is very beautifully said, and I think that's what we are talking about regarding like a unique value that we have as a human being. Thanks for your sharing, Bima. And how about you, Lalas?
The question is the meaning of life.
That's a very, very strong question. The question is, yes, do you believe that there's a purpose of life, a unique meaning? And if there is for you, what it is?
Yeah, it's a really deep question, and it's been bothering me since I was a really young girl, I would say. Like, I don't know if you have that experience, like when I was a really, really little girl, like probably in kindergarten, I would be struggling with this question of death. You know, I was really scared of death, still today. I mean, like probably most of us do, but I don't know where I get that. Like, it started really early. When I was a little girl, I would be really afraid of going to bed. Like the feeling of falling asleep, you know, the actual falling, falling into unconsciousness is so scary for me. And for whatever reason, I thought it's super similar to death. And later when I grew up, I read a lot of books about death. And actually in Tibetan Buddhism, sleeping is a mini death. So I didn't know like how, as a really young girl, I started questioning it. And I was like asking my mom and adults, I was like, hey, I'm really afraid of death. And my mom was laughing. She was like, we're all gonna die. Probably a lot of us got that, right? If you ever ask that question, they would be like shooing you away and be like, we all die. It's not even a question. Why are you even asking? And then it's bothering me even more, because if we're all dying, what's the point of living? I was, you know, like that question started really early. So when I was in primary school, I started reading about death. And I mean, that's probably, you know, why I'm more sensitive or like more depressed than my peers should be. And that's like, I mean, I would say right now, if you ask me, I'm still looking for the answer, and probably I will never find the answer. But now, if you ask me, for me, really personally, I think the searching itself is the meaning. So last year, not last year, actually, the beginning of this year, probably January something, you know, because I was in a yoga retreat for this new year, for this past new year. So during one specific meditation, it really came to me that I will live my life, this life, as a pilgrimage. It's a journey of searching. And I don't care if I get to the destination. The searching itself is meaningful for me. And all the people, everything that I will be meeting or I have met during the journey is the meaning itself. And I would really, you know, appreciate everything and not change it for anything, if that answers your question.
Yeah, thanks a lot for sharing. And that actually reminds me of a book that I read before by Arianna Fallaci, one of the most famous journalists, actually from Italy as well. She wrote a book called Letter to an Unborn Child. I don't know if 12 of you have read that before. So basically she's imagining if she's getting pregnant and what is she gonna, you know, speak to the child. And she wrote a whole book about this. And I remember there was a paragraph talking about her belief, as what almost all of us just said about probably initially no meaning. Everything, the universe is chaotic, it's meaningless. And then we will have to create our own meaning out of this meaninglessness. But at the same time, she also said in the book, you know, let's just, you know, start this brief journey. It's precious to be a human. It's precious to be able to think, to act, you know, to live this life. So yeah, I think I constantly thinking about, as Lala's just mentioned, you know, being grateful for everything that is surrounding us. When I was deeply depressed, one mini exercise I do every day is because I don't know for you guys, but for me, when I was depressed, morning was much difficult than the evening. Like evening was fine because I have done a lot of things during the day that I can go to sleep, but morning was very difficult thinking about I have to wake up, I have to deal with all those shit in life, and then have this little exercise of thinking about what is just one thing that I really look forward to today and what is one thing that I feel really happy about yesterday. Even just, you know, having a good meal, just thinking about there's people who couldn't even do that, I think. Yeah, so life is about all those little moments that we experience, you know, individually and together. So yeah, I think I don't have further questions regarding the podcast. I don't know if there's like one or two things in the end that you want to share, like a book, a movie, or whatever that's, you know, you want to share with the audience before we end this conversation today. Maybe we can start with Bhima.
I think, like, you know, I would share, like, you know, some practical advices, but like, you know, from the way I actually, like, you know, understand is that today we've talked like quite a lot of things, and there are clear themes that like three of us, our talks are actually like, you know, intertwined in a way. So it looks like, you know, we are meant to have this conversation at some point, and then we get to have it, and then we get to have it in a way that we can share with a lot of people. And and it's also like, you know, part of the journey, right? So I think the best thing is don't like, you know, freak out when you're actually going through depression, or when you're like, you know, going through, when you feel diagnosed or like, you know, something like that. Because what I realize is that the hardest thing that we need to do is we really like forget the value of just being alive and being present. Like, you know, every time we hear a diagnosis result or else like, you know, when something doesn't go the way that we want. And most of the time, just like, you know, we really like really don't know that we are like really truly alive, like, you know, how grateful it is to be alive, right? So there is a line that Lala's actually said, which is basically how to be like felt alive in a way. So because like, you know, I know that you're afraid of death, right? Like, you know, but if you take the exact opposite of it is basically, have you considered that like, you know, when you like feel extremely alive? So I got the chance to dive 18 meters, like, you know, when I was in Phuket in the early of this year. And I literally freaked out, like, you know, in the middle of my probably like sixth dive, like, you know, in a cave. And my heart rate was actually close to 225. So like 250, you die mostly. And then like, you know, like my heart rate, I actually like, you know, literally felt like, you know, trying to come out of my chest. So, and you're like completely uncontrollable, right? Like, you know, you have your diving instructor one side, and then again, you're just like under 18 meters of water on a cave, right? So if you freak out, you die. Like, that's simple as it is, right? So basically, I'm telling the guy, I want to go up, right? And then the instructor is like, you know, take me out. And then he actually let me go down to the bottom of the ocean and asked me to kneel down. Like, my heart rate is 225. I'm freaking out. Instead of, I'm trying to see whether it's like language translation problem, right? I want to go up, but he's just like, you know, like, no, we are going down. I'm like, dude, I want to go up, right? Like, I'm getting more panicked. So ended up happening. He took me to down and then asked me to breathe with him. And after 5 minutes, we were both okay, right? And I asked him that, why did you do that? He said that you in this situation is not only dangerous for you, it's also dangerous for me. So a lot of the time that we forget that you being depressed does not only affect you, it affects the people around you at the same time. And don't be depressed and don't be selfish at the same time. So this is my first advice. Because right now, like, I'm not saying Jolingho, Lingdingho type of like a generalization, but like, you know, everyone is like, you know, Hanseyo, YOLO type, right? I'm slightly bit older than I think two of you guys, like a little bit. But I think what is that this concept of like, you know, Hanseyo, YOLO thing is not the best attitude when you're going through depression, because that empowers being alone and you're going through shit yourself. So, and you tell yourself, I'm strong, I'm this like amazing person, like no one can like, you know, mess with me type of a vibe. But no, when you are depressed, your parents are depressed, your friends and family are depressed, everyone is depressed around you, right? So pick one, either be depressed or either be selfish, but don't do both at the same time. So if you are a depressed, selfish person, right? So that is really bad for you and the people around you. So when God gives you help, right? So being selfish, you're going to reject all the help. So the key thing is that, like, you know, accept the help that is coming to your way as it is. Even if it's a coffee conversation. And when someone says that, like, you know, simple thing, like, you know, I understand what you're going through, don't say through things like, you know, basically, you don't know what I'm going through. You have no idea what I'm going through. Like, you know, because like and don't blame that on depression and saying that, like, I'm saying that is because I'm depressed. Because most of the time when you are confused about, like, you know, what you're trying to say and how you feel, right? Take this simple rule where that you think before you talk. So why ChatGPT is the best bot is because it thinks before it types and displays the answer. Unlike other chatbots or like you know, Kerfu type of like, you know, LiaoTianCiCiren. So rather than when you ask a question, it replies. ChatGPT has this thing called hidden state. So it actually like make the answer in its head and wait for 10 seconds, making sure the answer is correct, and then show it to the person in front of you. That's why it's an intelligent AI. So if the AI can do that, right, I think a human can do that too, which is like when God sends you help through a person and the person says like, you know, shall I take you to coffee? Be GPT and then think in your head for like 10 seconds before saying something out because you're just not feeling really good. So when you have like this post button on demand, right, Like, I think that is going to help you protect a lot of relationships and become less selfish, more generous, depressed person. So being depressed is okay, but don't be selfish. Be a very generous type of a depressed person so that you can get out of your situation much more faster. So I think that would be my one and only advice.
Thanks, Viva, a lot for that. And how about Lalas? What do you want to share?
Yeah, I mean, like to conclude this, I would like to share so far the book helped me the most during, you know, this healing journey, and I recommend it to many, many of my friends. It's The Surrender Experiment. I'm not sure if you guys read it. It's really good by Michael Singer. And I mean, you know, let's just surrender to the flow of life. It's the only thing actually we can do, you know, no matter how you think you can fight against it, it's not gonna work. Because I'm a Virgo, I know it, you know, like I used to like be super meticulous about everything. I like to plan things out and all that. I don't know, since when I just stopped making schedules. I stopped making like all these kind of agendas, because whatever you do, life will always surprise you. So after some time, I just feel like, okay, leave it. I surrender. Yeah. And whenever something bad happens in your life, just surrender. Because maybe time goes by, you look back, bad turns into good. Who knows, right? Good can turn into bad. All these things, they're just like flowing. And just accept the fluidity of life, of everything. Everything is just fluid. So yeah, let's all surrender.
So accept the flu and fluidity. Yeah. That's really a good advice to Bhima, because I know he's a bit sick right now.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that's circle back to what my professor said, which I still remember clearly. You can't strategize life. It just comes. But thanks a lot today for Bhima and Lalas to be in this conversation. I think we touch upon a lot of different topics, including being aware about, you know, the mental and even to more extent the physical sickness we're having during the depression, including how to focus now and distracting ourselves from all those past and future toxic thoughts, including the nature of us being sensitive and how do we process, you know, how other people think about ourselves and how we think about ourselves on our own, including the topic of meaning and purpose. And I've learned a lot through you know, this conversation. So thanks a lot for that. And so I hope I can see you guys very soon when I go back to China.
Thank you, Xiaoning.
Thank you.
Thank you, Bhima. I really enjoyed it. Thank you.
Thank you, Lalas. Yeah. Goodbye.